Jo, det ska det vara.
Det är kassett nummer 3, det är sida nummer 1.
Det fortsätter på intervju med Gustav Andersson, Jamestown, New York, Florida den 18 juni 1985. Så du kom hem då till föräldragården och,
ja,
och brodern och pappa och,
ja,
och mamma, levde hon också?
Ja, min styrmor levde, först min mor dog för jag var precis 9. Hon dog i början på maj, jag var 28 maj var jag 9 år. Så. Men jag ska säga, med 32, 34 så Crescent Tool har en massa folk, even the mechanics, top mechanics was laid off. So that was a bad year.
Så, hur länge stannade du hemma 36?
Ja, utöver 2 månader.
2 månader?
Ja.
Och du hittade ingenting arbete som passade direkt? Eller du var inte någon vidare pigg på?
Wow.
Din gamla flickvän, fanns hon kvar?
Ja, det var... Det var förstås allt.
Det var vatten under...
Ja, men nej, ja, det är roligt. Det var ju mycket... En annan var ung. Jag mötte 2 pojkar i Nossebro på en dans där. De hade varit i Kanada. Och de har staten, svenska staten, har skickat dem hem under.
Ja.
De sa att jag gick med en stor betal... De stole potatoes from a farmer there and he come off with a shotgun. So I guess a lot of people had a lot worse than I had.
It was in Canada.
I was in Canada. Uh-huh. And my aunt told me about 2 Swedish boys were found in Chicago sitting dying of asphalt on the bench there, and they only had a grass in their stomach. Yeah. Uh-huh. And a lot of those who had a girlfriend who worked for the family, they, you know, they went and got little sandwiches.
Så de, talade du om detta för pappa din och din bror när du var hemma? Att det var dåligt här mycket eller hade varit dåligt?
Ja, det var dåligt i Sverige. Ja, det visste de. Det hörde ju. De skrev ju hem ofta. Ja, you know. But somehow I got along. And I made awful good money those 3 first months I worked that carrying those cement. Because we got 60 cents an hour, which was a high money. 10 cents more than the truck drivers. And we worked, sometimes we worked the whole week and Sunday too, you know, 10 hours a day. I was making more money than my uncle, who was an inspector for New York Central Railroad. And that, I had a little bag, see. I had some in Nashville Bank, and I never got the money before, maybe in 1940 I got the last of that. And, you know, the banks went to the, you know, too. Yeah.
But there was good pay, but it was hard backbreaking.
Yeah, there had 11 people in that job in 3 weeks. And they were big Husky guys, you know. But there wasn't that old Louis Olson there. He had been, like say, in giant in his young days and no like Italians. And he said, when I was young, he said, 100 kilo nothing, 100 kilo nothing. He must have been pretty strong. I know he carried 3 bags up sometime. And
3 bags?
2 bags. I carried 3 once and never did it again. That left on my hand. That was almost 300 pounds, you know, 150 kilo, 140 kilo, yeah.
Och du hade betalt för varje säck du bar upp?
Nej, det var fin peng. But you know, we had 17 trucks going. Some were small and some were big, you know. And they were, we were building that for a road to Cleveland and, the, you know, four-way road, you know.
The highway.
And then they want to build a lot of street. There was same thing on Long Island there. No, Staten Island, where my father-in-law lived. That they made a lot of street. They thought things was going to go, you know. The stock market was flying and everybody thought it was going to keep on, you know. And they built on, made new streets in those parts of cities. And there was a lot of work, see. And then when the market went at 27th of October, boom.
Boom, cementsäckarna.
Huh?
So to carry 3 bags now, that was just to show off you did there? Or?
I did it just for show off. I should never done it. that was a Frenchman. He told me he was a Frenchman. He was driving. He told me, I understood there. He said, what's the matter with your feet? Sweet, he said. He thought I was going to cut down the time, you know. But that worked in the table. But could say what I mean. We were used to heavy lifting, you know. That was. But you were foolish. You do a lot of foolish things when you're young.
For competing.
Yeah.
Were you still in athletic?
I stayed with my uncle then, my aunt, in Estherville. But she thought, you come home, you know, full of cement, you know, you had to, you know, it never got out of you, you know. And that big Louis, he had a gray and beard stuck out, kind of had been reddish, kind of one at a time, it was blonde, you know, and he looked like, it's a big hands and big feet and the big head, you know, he was skinny, he was still weighed over 200 pounds, but, you know, he was nothing like he had been in the days when he was, my dad said he weighed, even under heat in the summer, weighed over 230 pounds, 40 pounds, and he was a big, you know, he was
one of the...
Yeah.
And strong.
Strong. Well, Smith Strand, Swanson, his name called him, he come from an old soccer.
Yeah.
He was almost 7 feet tall and strong. And his dad never, when the horse got stuck, he used to fall up the horse. And they were giants because it was hard work. When they got down on the bottom, there was all floor them days, and the boats were small, probably 5,000 tonners. My dad said he shoveled 2 tons in a minute. They had 2 buckets. And of course, the ore was heavy. There was 100 pounds on the shovel, he said.
How could you compete now with those guys? I mean, how much do you weigh? 80 kilos?
Yeah, well, I weighed around 164, 65 pounds. That was 10. Yeah.
And you carry 300 pounds.
Well.
They almost kill you.
Well, that could almost kill you. But what I mean, we loaded on those wheelbarrows, a shagger there in Tegelbrück, up to 300 kilos, you know. Yeah.
So, were they större for folk, tror du? Eller var det så du...
Well, what I mean, they're bigger today. People are much taller and bigger, you know.
Today,
yes.
Oh, but they were stronger years.
They were harder.
Harder?
Yeah. And that's like my cousin said, he said there was a lot of Finns came to Estherville, Finnish people come to Estherville, and they were awful tough, he said, when they first came in. A couple of 3 years, they were just soft like us, he said. Of course, my cousin was a big fellow, over 6 foot, and he was later years captain on the old boats, you know. And he was very strong, because I guess I came from a very strong family. My mother's father, you know, well, let's go back to those old sweet stories. You know, there was that store, it was a grocery store, well, all-round store like they were not very far, only a few hundred feet from my home. And at Christmas time, you probably heard that they sent for a barrel of whiskey.
Yeah.
And the farmers come around and with their milk cans and they always say they make it kind of snort so they relate the real of all that. They say, how many of them can bear in and see if it's turned up at 325 kilos.
Yeah.
And one cart groove, you know. And then far, well, it's that cook. Anyway, how many made a smith, they made a gymnastic. Han hade kastat in den här jätten en gång, så jag tog nästan hela medelmangen för. Så jag frågade honom hur han kunde göra det. Ja, tog han i medtaget, sa han.
Medtaget?
Ja, det kan, men andra tror då svang han honom.
Så han tappade balansen?
Ja, och säger i same direction, så...
Ja, ja.
Så centrifugal power.
Ja, ja. Centrifugal.
Ja.
Alltså 325 kilo, det var ingenting. Hur kunde de hålla i tunna på ryggen då?
Nej, de tog det så här. På knäna. På knäna, bröstet.
På knäna?
Ja.
Kors,
ja, jag vet han som var den gamla drängen, han sa att det var hårt att arbeta för sig. Han skickades ut för att göra samma saker och han den gamla ekskogen jag talade om för dig. Och han la i kull vagnen och så rullade han upp med en påle. Och så hade han hästarna till rätta vagnen igen.
Nej.
Han skulle använda huvudet, men han hade inte en styrka som min morfar hade. Mm. Ja, det var gärna på den tiden. Ja. Ja, det är givet, i min ungdom så skulle de stå i en skeppall efter en 100 kilo säck på ryggen. Och den köra det, då var det inte en kar.
Ja, det var ju det.
Ja.
Så vi skulle skämmas då,
ja.
Men hur var det här nu på arbeten i Amerika då? Var det inte likadant på byggnadsarbeten och bära sten och tiger? Och...
Oh yes, det var så.
Alltså, du vill inte skämmas att du var för vik?
Ja, det var ju... Det säger jag, jag hörde för tag som en kamrat som jobbade i Chicago. Han var ju, han var grovarbetare då, han var ju snickare sin. Han sa att de var norskar och svenskar irländare. Och de arbetade på vår sida i hus och var tegat in 2000 stenar om dagen. Och om dem som kom upp folk så skickade jag upp den frågan.
Ser du det?
Ja. Men han hade ju några pengar i Chicago och han kom hit och han förlorade ju vad han hade i banken i Chicago.
Alltså han åkte?
Ja, ja.
Pendan?
Ja.
Så flaggan åkte ner?
Ja. Jag tror inte det var så farligt i Sverige att de inte förlorade pengarna egentligen i bankerna som de gjorde här.
Ja, det var väl det att folk hade satt in mer pengar i Amerika naturligtvis.
Ja, det var möjligt.
Det blev mer tal på det viset.
Ja.
I Sverige var det inte en storbönder som kunde sätta in pengar.
Ja, och de hade lite på sparbanken.
Arbetarna hade inga sparböcker?
Nej, de hade inga sparböcker, nej.
När hade du din första sparbanksbok här i Amerika?
Det hade jag i Ersta. Det var min faster. Hon var väldigt bäst. Hon
var noga med det?
Ja, hon sa att du sätta in pengar med samma.
Ja. Var det före kraschen?
Det var 29.
Vad sa hon efter kraschen?
Ja, vad hon, som jag sa om att om inte jag fått jobbet här så hade han... Så hade han skickat hem mig.
Han gjort det?
Ja. När jag lämnade Detroit så sa han den här... Han var en bror till en kamrat jag hade i slaktare i Frambo. Han var utkastad i Savoy i Trollhättan efter. Han var brottare.
Vad hette han?
Hette Helmer Johansson. Hans bror var en kort, stark, väldigt stark karl också. Han sa till mig, it's too bad. He said, you have to go to Jamestown, you never get more than 50 cents an hour.
Det var
känt
som en dålig...
Ja, det var känt. He was making a dollar an hour. He was a repairman in... Well, was a repairman.
Beroende på det dåliga ryktet, det var att det var många svenskar som kom hit, förstås.
Så många svenskar kom hit, ja.
Och italienare och albanier.
Ja, ja.
Vad beror det på att det är så mycket albanier här i Jamestown?
Ja, det var kanske en familj som kom här, vi ser.
Och
lockade
hit för det?
Ja.
Hur är de jämförda med italienare? Är det ungefär samma folkslag eller?
Ja, det är nog lite bra med nära. Jugoslaven är mycket bättre.
Vad säger du det?
Ja, det tror jag. Det säger jag, det har det funnits ut i Sverige också. Att det är bättre arbetare och mer rejäla karar. Men det ska ju inte...
Nej, men alltså det blir gärna så att man dömer efter...
Ja, man ska ju inte skälla på, jag vill säga, ta illa om någon.
Men det är så att har du varit med någon i arbetslivet så kommer karaktären fram.
Ja, man kan ju säga, det är ju vänliga och många gånger hjälpsamma också. Mera, de gamla svenskarna, de hade learned the hard way.
Ja.
And they were not quick to learn you anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nej.
Så de ville inte att du skulle få det för rättvidigt?
Nej, well,
de skulle krypa först.
Job was their god, you know what I mean? They was important to them, they was their livelihood, you know, and
ja.
Competition was king.
So if you got a head...
After the war, things changed, you know. All I'm telling you, they didn't push them around anymore.
No.
But they tore them right out, those boys that came back at...
But before the war, if you had gotten an easy job, good pay,
yeah,
they would have looked down on you because you didn't crawl enough before you got that.
Well, they figured it was one thing. You had some pull, you know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Somebody helped you along.
Somebody helps you along. Yeah, well, I guess it's a
human
nature. Yeah.
But after the war was a different story. Anyway, you went back then to the United States again on the boat.
Yeah.
And then when you came back to Jamestown, did you have your old job then, or?
Yeah, I had my old job back, yes. Oh.
Yeah. And no problem?
No problem. And then I'd ask for permission, you know.
Okay. Yeah. And then you met your future wife.
Yeah. And I went back to New York in the fall there and met her. She came back in September. And she had to put on 25 pounds.
Who?
Helen.
Oh. And her name is Helen?
Helen Margareta Sundström.
Sundström?
Yeah.
And she was from?
New York.
New York, yeah. Brooklyn.
Yeah. And she worked in the press bureau there, you know, proofreading and something like that, and only got $10 a week.
Mm-hmm. So you met her on the boat?
On the boat, yeah.
And then you started to correspond?
Yes, right, yeah. And then she came here following summer for a vacation. And, mm-hmm.
You know, and then you were engaged and
we were engaged.
Married?
Yeah, that following New Year's. But we were engaged and then...
And then she moved here too?
Yeah, and then she moved here. She thought we had a wooden sidewalk there. That was way out west.
She never heard about Jamestown before?
No. She didn't know which was a bull or a car.
You had to
but
break her in?
She'd been... She had a very good business sense, you know. She said she was brought up among the youths, you know.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, I suppose
it's
more Jews than Swedes in Brooklyn.
Yeah, more Jews than Swedes. So she's been a very good wife and have a lot to thank her for what we have today.
Yeah. Well, I suppose in hard times it's easier to be two than
yeah.
To help out. And so when you got married then, did she continue to work or?
She worked a little for about 2 years, a little bit off and on, but she only got $6-7 a week. She worked for a dentist.
For a dentist?
Yeah.
As a secretary?
Yeah, something like that, and you know, help out, you know, taking care of patients and so forth. Yeah. So, I'm telling you, there was big money.
Well, I suppose then,
it helped. Yeah. And when we... When I had a full week, so I made a little over $20. We could go to the to the theater, you know.
Uh-huh. So now if we leave the work and labor unions and stuff like that. So you became a union guy then after a while, in other words.
Oh yeah,
you had to join the union.
Uh-huh.
Did you have any position in the...
No, I was just a committee man.
Committee man, yeah.
Yeah.
Did the members go to the union meetings regularly?
Well,
how was the support?
When it was something, when there was something was going to happen, so they were trying for a raise, then they were all there, and then there was only those who were really interested, who worked hard. And what I mean, they were those people who tried to, there were some very good men there in Crescent Thule. Well, I guess they come over after Storstrejken in Sweden, you know, like for Krohn and Johnson, there were some very good union men, and they were
tough,
kind of liberal, you know, they were...
Well, liberal?
Yeah, they were the Olsen and those guys, they were, you know, they had to start to learn it in Sweden, you know, when the breakthrough, you know, in Sweden, the 1989, you know. And they were real union men. They were for the labor, you know.
Were there any socialist party here in Swedes?
There was no There was a socialist party here, and there was even some communists here. They called them communists.
Were they called them communists?
Yeah, there was one here. He was born here named Hindenburg. He couldn't get a job there, so he had to go to Buffalo. He was a communist, you know.
Hindenburg.
Yeah.
So, and they sold the newspaper and the
station. Yeah. And you had one who started as, he was a plot slogger, I was his name, And he was a socialist, and he was pretty, they were as old type of came from Sweden, you know.
So they painted him black,
yeah,
pretty soon. How about the city government now in Jamestown? Did they favor the management's side or the workers?
Well, I wasn't here, I was in Mabel then when he had, there was supposed to in the bush there, the 5,000 marched to the city hall here. And everyone, I guess, got blacklisted.
Oh, the workers?
Well, they were, you know, they were radicals. Named radicals, they were not radicals, they were just like you and I, but, you know.
Five thousand of them.
5,000 of them.
They walked through the city hall?
They walked the city hall, yeah, trying to get jobs and, you know.
No, they were desperate, I suppose. They were
desperate, yes. Very so.
No, nothing to eat.
Yeah, you know, the boy is very in going because the food and being a hurt for them to eat. Well, they have you always worked here at them, had a strike, British, breeder they call, you know, scabs.
Yes.
Yeah. And I know Mrs. Wolf, who I bored of it in Mabel there, she told me that and the homestead strike there, you know, that was one of the worst in the history in, you know, some of those writers, one of the biggest writers wrote about it, you know, like Stephen Lincoln, Stephen, I guess is his name. No, Stephen Lincoln. He was quite a writer about, and he said that so far as politics, you know, the doors of hell was wide open in Pittsburgh, you know. And there to come the military came down on the from the high river and opened fire right on the workers. It's like nothing, you know. And so it was a struggle, you know. It was bad, like they were in England and all over, you know. Probably never as bad in Sweden as it was in England and France, you know, child labor and. That's part of it, I guess, all over the world. All the textile factories in England, it was child labor, you know.
So, were Jamestown isolated from other cities, you think? Like you mentioned here, Buffalo, they didn't respect any decision from Jamestown.
No, they didn't.
Because they were too small.
Yeah.
Had Jamestown felt that way? They had been not heard of a bigger.
Well, they had a reputation in the industry, they want to come in there because. They got a bad reputation that they were striking too much and so forth.
Here in Jamestown?
In Jamestown, yeah, for a while. So they had a bad reputation, but it was just, like Lundin said, they were hard. There was those people, you know, at the start of nothing, and they worked hard themselves, and look at the government of the United States now. Self-made millionaires, every one of them. Practically, you know.
Yeah, they are tough.
They are tough. So history almost repeat itself. So about it, I don't know. It's like they always said here that help yourself and the devil take the hindmost. That was
only the strong will survive.
Only strong will survive.
So here you have now Sam Carlson. You don't remember him as a politician. You know he was mayor here for 26 years. Sam Carlson.
Oh yes, I remember.
He was a Swede.
He was a socialist, they call him.
No, but he was a Republican though. He voted for Republican.
He was a Republican, but he had
they called him a socialist.
Yeah, they thought so because he started him and Carl Peterson started a power plant here, electric.
Yes.
Yeah. And he started a water and he wanted to start a milk.
But they didn't fly.
They didn't get away. So everything was going to be more or less city-owned cup of tea, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. And that, of course, that was socialist ideas, you know.
They actually called him a socialist.
Well, he was a Republican, but
his ideas were socialistic.
His ideas were socialistic, yeah. So
the big shots then in Jamestown, the business leaders, did they go along with him or?
Well, I guess he have to because he was elected so many times. Like old man Linné, you know, he was one who could have the money, and he spent a lot for the Republicans, you know, and he was going to elect the sheriff here once, and that's what he said, how much the cost of every vote cost him to live much. You know, you hear, I don't know if things are true, but you know, but he was the big boy, you know.
Linné?
Yeah.
Oscar Linné?
Yeah, Oscar.
He is the one that owned the Blackstone?
Yeah, Blackstone, yeah. Yeah, he was.
Han var smålänning?
Han var smålänning. And det var en idé också som när kylapparaterna som man gör. Det var en svensk idé också, vet du. Och den här karen, han hade ingen, han gick för honom och kom fram. Vi hade haft salon ihop här med Peterson. Det började som före prohibition, you know, före första världskriget, så hade de en salon. Det var det enda svenskan som hade $40,000, ni sa.
Alltså på den tiden?
Det började med, ja.
Så de
hade
gjort det bra?
De hade gjort det bra. Yeah, han var faxig också. When there was a strike there, he said he didn't even know there was a strike. That there was a union there, you know. So there was a lot of people got laid off there at Blackstone at one time too during the 30s. So we're a union.
So det är en rätt gammal fabrik, Blackstone?
Yes, it's rätt gammal, yeah. Well, they were the washing machines, you know, they started with the washing machines years ago.
Och det var det de tillverkade?
Yeah. Yeah. I had 3 volumes. I bought the whole bike in the bibliothek, you know, the whole library. Mm-hmm. And there were a few books I wanted. And of course I didn't pay much for it. You just going to throw them out, you know. Because if you've been up there lately, you know, there's no library anymore. We had a beautiful library there.
Mm-hmm. Ja, vi ska gå in på det här lite senare med Viking och föreningar och sånt här. Men jag provar lite grann mer nu om... So, the Swedish business versus the American business. Were there more Swedish on the businesses in Jamestown than the American, do you think? Restaurants, dentists, doctors?
Probably not so much in the professional as dentists. There was probably... American. And there was a few doctors. And a few lawyers, not too many.
Watchmakers?
Yes, there was watchmakers, and there was merchants. And down in the main street, there was a lot of Swedish names, Abramson and Bigelow's, and there was Lundqvist. And there was Lundqvist Hardware, Lundqvist and Söderström, Herrick Peering. And there was...
Swanson's Drugstore?
Swanson's Drugstore, and there was, gosh, and there was... Yeah, names doesn't come to me anymore, Lindquist had a tailor factory there down the square that's gone, of course, now. Everything. And there was the Dahl's rooms, there was all the factories were mostly Swedish, you know, Blanfield, like Crescent, Danielson, Blackstone, you know, they were all... run by Swedes, practically. And if they weren't running, they were Swedish superintendents, management. So it's... we had a cottage there, we used to go and see this Mr. White. He was in agriculture. He was on the Roosevelt's committee to raise food during the World War. And he told me, he said, there was the Swedes who made, the English come here with their wooden mills, you know, Worcester's mills, yes. And the spinnery. And then the Swedes come with, there was furnaces started here by the English too, you know, like a few of them. But when the Swedes come, they got really built up. There were 2 Helm brothers here. And they came, I think, in 1994, they started in 1894 with his own factory. And of course Dahlström, he was a genius, you know, he invented a lot of things, you know. And and the same thing in Crescent too, a lot of machine was home, their own manufacturer. And so Dahlström, he worked Boston, Milwaukee, Chicago, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and he got acquainted with the Westinghouse, Mr. Westinghouse himself. I guess they were friends to the dying days. And he was also an inventor. And Norton was probably, he had to go to Stockholm's Tekniska.
Oh, so he was
trained in Sweden. And you know, that's, that means everything in the world, you know. And you take Donald Hart medal there with Swedes. Jan, my son, gave me a book for Christmas about that medal, how they paid it. It was the biggest. They had over 1,000 employees there. And they were Swedes.
Detta är sida nummer 2, kassett nummer 3, det är fortsättning med Gustav Andersson, Jamestown, New York. Och det är den 18 juli 1985. Så de hade inte svårt att komma igång då efter de engelsmännen, de blev nästan utkörda då. The English.
The English, the English started a railroad, a traction there from between Naval, between Jamestown and Westfield, and I think there was some going over to Warren and so forth. So, and they started a Worcester mill, and they even started a furniture business there, actually. United Lumber and Mill, there was a mill there, they made tables and they shipped them down to Pittsburgh by the rivers, you know. It's hard to. Well, I mean, you have to go, and then the Swedes come, and they, like the Mr. White told me, they really made Jamestown because they bought metal and wood, you know. And like I said, it was 42 furniture factories, several metal factories, and one of them went to Corey Jamestown, you know. That was, he started here. He was born in Sweden. I met the old gentleman. He used to have a cottage to come up to a church meal, and I met him several times. Very, very nice fellow.
So the English, they couldn't keep up with the Swedes, then they were almost overwhelmed.
They come were strong in their, maybe some, a lot of them before they were 20 or shortly after they had done the army service in Sweden. You know, they were
pushy,
they were, what I mean, in Eric, they were, they want to make a good living, and they worked hard, they worked very hard.
But you would think now, like the English people, they are well acquainted with business law.
Well, they had been there so long, so they were more, you know.
But they don't, it seems to me that they relaxed a little bit there, and the Swedes took it over.
Yeah, they relaxed, see.
No, what happened? They didn't care too much about fighting.
To them, Swedes were foreigners, you know.
Yeah.
And, but they took over and they made Jamestown as boss. We had 46,000 people, now they're probably 10,000 less, you know. And all the surrounding. But then, like this Anderson told me, he said, you know, like my uncles that have worked, and now their children and grandchildren, they built houses and out on the Hunt Road and played golf, you know.
Has it been like that, you think?
I think they will relax after a while. And of course, like my son Jan said, what's the use for a doctor to make so much more money, he just pay more taxes, so. And that's probably true.
So he takes off a couple of days.
Huh?
He takes off a couple of days. But you couldn't do that.
I couldn't do that. Never could. And I suppose I wasn't made that way either.
You wouldn't feel right.
Huh?
You wouldn't feel right if you...
Yeah, I could never sit still. I have to now, you know, but because I can't.
So your boys, they grew up then and went to school, you said?
Yeah.
Cornell, one of them, and the other one also.
And then he took up labor relations first, he wanted, I guess, be able, but then he could, they were all nothing but youth. So he didn't like the school, so he went 2 years to in Ohio, and when he graduated there, he got married shortly after. He worked in the bank here, what they call for junior executive training, you know, something like that. Well, there was no money in it, so she said she'll keep on teaching school. She taught school in a high school that year, and he worked in the bank, and he saved up a little money. And he went back to Cornell for 2 years for his master's, you know, in Sloan, in the hospital administration and business. So when he got the first job in Milwaukee, and he started off at $15,500, there was no bad money then. So he done all right.
They did it pretty good then.
They have done all right.
So
they can't speak English, and that was my trouble.
No, so you saw that your fruits were ripe in any way, and it's
yeah.
Right.
I suppose I spent too much time with the Vikings.
So how? Yes, but now.
What I mean.
So has there been any discussion between your boys now and yourself about different attitudes on?
Yes.
Did they see you work?
I tried to make them liberal, you know.
Yeah.
Born in a very conservative family back home, and taught politics by two very big Republicans in this county. So, first, especially, I didn't turn Democrat before we moved up here, you know. But that didn't mean they never know why you voted anyway. So.
No. So you came with a conservative background. Your
yes.
Father was Högerman.
Yeah, I was Högerman. But he was a liberal in his thinking, too.
No. You felt a different way. In other words, you were more liberal.
I must have been born liberal. So, you know, we were working at a road one summer, the hired man and I, and they come and inspected, and he was represented, I guess, I don't know, it was Riksdagsman, I guess he was, and it wasn't exactly right, so they say, never going to vote for Höger no more.
Fair enough. But don't you think politics is... depending on what you are doing and your luck in life. If you have a tough, you probably become a Democrat.
Democrat, yeah, well, liberal, liberal, you may say, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're a fortune to make money, you want to hang on to it.
Yes.
Yeah. But well, I was surprised. There's a lot of big boys, but you know, like one who was the ambassador to Russia for many years and so forth. He was very, you know, and the Roosevelt family, of course, were all Republicans, you know.
The Roosevelt family?
Yeah. When he turned a Democrat, you know. Yeah.
And they paid off?
Yeah, they paid off. But it seems like an upcoming, that's what we call what we have, you know, a lot of people right now in Washington, you know, they are brought themselves up from the bootstraps. Well, they have but then their son, their grandson, they are used to it. So, and they meet other people and they get more liberal. That's a funny part of it. I think that's like my brother-in-law in Sweden. If one family could grab everything, you know, that's a good thing you'd get poorer because otherwise one family would own the whole world.
Yeah.
You know, like the Rothschilds, you know, they have Rothschild families, I guess it's wealthy all over the world, you know. And they could, if there doesn't come in some weakling, you know, they would own the whole world, you know.
So there gotta be some, like Truman said, you know, the buck stops here.
Yeah, the buck stops there, you know. He was quite a guy. Of course, he suddenly was a Democrat because of the Civil War. You know, that's as far as I do, you know. And they hung in yet, you know, and of course they hated they used to call it people, and yet they, but they many times they were good friends. A lot of those better families had call a nanny. Support, you know, that maybe the lady didn't have enough milk, so brought up by colored people, around the colored people all the time, you know, so... But I met a girl once from down south, you know, she was... And she come from, I suppose, this thing, the plantation family, the Gold King plantation. I suppose it was somebody before the Civil War, you know. And she told me, said, at the colored people couldn't pay them money. He said, $5, that was enough to pay them a day because they couldn't pay them any more money. They were not educated. They were not allowed to be educated. They were not allowed to teach the colored people. You know the history as well as I do. There's no use to say. So it's...
But it's just idea, you know, when they should start to learn to handle it.
My friend?
She never thought of it this way, you know, that they, when should they start to handle the money?
Yeah, that's right.
It's like the Indians, you know, they can't get the liquor, they say, because they get crazy.
Yeah, they couldn't, yeah.
But the Swedes and the Irish, they get crazy too, but it's okay.
Yeah. The Swedes and the Irish are known for heavy drinkers, you know.
Well, they are known for that, that part.
Yeah. Like, Roger Hill, you know, he was one of those railroad magnates, and he said, you know, just give me enough snuff and whiskey and more sweets, I'll build the railroad through hell, he said. You heard of that, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, the Irish and the Swedes built a railroad, and like Amandus Johnson was a teacher at Pennsylvania. He was a professor of history, said that the Swedes has broken more ground than the international, 50 neck for every woman and child, per person. And of course, like one said, the Scandinavians have built more building after, you know, a percentage than any other nationality.
So they left footsteps in the sand,
yeah.
Or footprints.
Yeah, like the Swedes said, I don't care so much for the money as long as I have work for the winter. That's the Jameson story, you know.
Well, there was probably the thinking, you know, when they came here, that to keep the family and the kids.
Yeah, and so
food and clothing.
So they educated most of them. Those who had wanted to study, so we lost all the good, you know, we lost all the good young people here. I didn't want my son John to come back here, no home.
No?
That's what he said, Jamestown is the king city, he said, and it was. And like I said, you know, people will not invest in business or anything, so they'll buy stock. You know, and I guess he was right. But then we went to what I call a block meeting here once, my wife and I never took really interest, personally, in politics, but I tried to keep abreast of things, you know. And police chief, who was still on the city council, he was police chief, Rob Palladino, very in Italian, but in Northern Italian, you know. A very good man, and he said, while they were discussing, there were some very bright boys there in both Swedish and Italian, and they asked him, is any hope for Jamestown? Yes, he said, it's some young coming, they're all Democrats, he said, coming into Jamestown. There was Lundin, and there was Carlson, who is mayor now, and there was my son, and there was Kidder, and several others who came in here, and they had new ideas, and so John was on the, what do you call it, for an industrial committee for quite a while there. Then he was on the county. He said, how much pay? I said, well, he said, the same pay, nothing.
But they are all Democrats.
They are all Democrats, but they don't say they don't vote for Reagan.
So that's...
No,
yeah, the future of Jamestown.
Yeah, so my son has been a fundraiser for Lundin all through. Mm-hmm. And it's still there, you know.
Yes.
And my other son is working for, up in New England, for Ned Roosevelt. The youngest son of, the oldest son of Roosevelt, is it Theodore Ted, no, what was his name now? Roosevelt. Anyway, he lives in California. He was a congressman in California. That's Roosevelt. And his son was, it's my son's lawyer, and was when he was in the hospital too. And he's very young. He's probably years older than my son, and he's very aggressive, very brilliant.
So he will be one of the future.
And he's trying to run for congressman up there, you know, in Massachusetts.
So he works in Massachusetts, your other son?
Yeah.
But he lives in Concord?
Concord. Well,
New Hampshire?
No, he don't live in New Hampshire. He had the hospital in Concord. But and that's where, you know, the Revolutionary War started, you know, there. And so, I don't know what. You have to say both sides, and of course, there comes the boss now.
Yeah.
And they're all Democrats or liberals. Oh. Majority, only now and then there's one who trying for their own benefit, you know. Who try to, because what I mean, the Republicans were strong here, and they figured if you want to get into any politics, they have to be Republicans, you know. But most of them, the little common sense, were like our close friend, Al Sabon. Now he had his own shop, and he turned, you know, he was the worst one to kick before, now he's kicking out.
He changed.
Yeah. I guess that you like to talk the same thing.
So, now if we start with your outside the job activities.
Yeah.
The Swedish fraternal orders, you have the Vikings, yeah. Stjord Vasa.
Yeah.
And the Scandinavian Brotherhood, and you have the Temperance. Yeah. When did you join one of those organizations?
I joined the Vikings in May 31.
May 31?
Yeah.
Oh, did you meet someone then from that group? Or?
It was a fella, had been superintendent up in Mabel, and he took me in there, and he wanted me to join, so I did. And I don't regret it. And I joined the Swedish Brotherhood, but they didn't last then. They were the biggest and strongest, but they died out because there was new ideas, you know.
There was the Leif Erikson Lodge.
Yeah, well, there was not the Leif Erikson. There were two branches, see. Yeah. Leif Erikson and the Swedish Brotherhood.
So you joined both of them, Vikings and?
Yeah, Swedish Brotherhood, yeah.
Why did you join both of them?
Yeah, I joined Vikings first, and in the 40s I joined the Swedish Brotherhood, but that was the tail end of it. They didn't exist much after the First World War, the Second World War.
And but they had about the same policies, though, hospitalization.
Yes, the hospitalization. During the Depression, they took up collection here, the Vikings. I guess they only got $2 a week, but we have $10 a week today. But you see, there wasn't any insurance then days, you know. There was no funds like they have today. You have, you know, if you're laid off, you have the insurance, or whatever you call it, you know. You pay for so many weeks or months, you know. There wasn't anything, you know. There was nothing.
So you joined both, you can get a bit more coverage.
Well, there wasn't much coverage, as I say.
But you still get that?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Well.
How could you afford to belong to two, though?
It wasn't too expensive then. Now, the beneficial member pays $34 plus the insurance. Mm-hmm. But you see, after you've been 20 years, you become 60, you only pay half. At 40 years, at 70, I don't pay any. And after 75, the grand lost that care of my insurance. Of course, it was so low, but I was young, and so many years ago, it's only 12 cents. See? Mm-hmm. So I am a freeloader.
Yeah. You have Well, served faithfully for many years, though.
Many, probably been an officer there for close to 40 years.
You paid your dues over the years.
I paid my...
Many other ways. What kind of activities did they have then, the Vikings? They built a temple down there in 1925.
Yeah, I joined a Maccabee Hall. It's right across from the new City Hall. And then we moved on to the arcade building. There's a building down down below the hill there, you know, in the middle of the hill almost. And they rented the Harmony had a little room where they practicing, and we had that. And then in 1934, we heard somebody else, the Moose, had started a business, you know, club business. So we got the idea, and we rented a Dutch camp in Lakewood, next for us to have the Rod and Gun. Now there was not a little creek there or beck, and on the other side there was the old Dutch club, had been a clubhouse for some people, I guess. We rented that for the summer, and one of the old timers donated a keg of beer. That's what we started with, and we made $500 on the nickel beer the first year. And then we come back, we took over the Leif Erikson's hall here in that kid building, and he started a bar business and club business. And from there on, 41, we moved into a new quarter. We heard through one of the fellows there, he heard in his barbershop, but it was for sale, and we bought it for $25,000. And today you can't build it for a million.
What kind of building was it? They said there was all swimming pools down there.
Yeah, there were swimming pools, and there was Swedish Massage there. And they had boats, you know, steam boats and stuff like that.
Oh, I see.
So then I was ahead of corporation when they built that new road here through the bridges and all that through town. And then we had in roads, we were underneath on the street. So where the old boilers, the heating plant was under the street, actually, under the sidewalk on the street. And we were not allowed anymore, so we had to build a wall. So we built a big cement block, 18-inch wide blocks there. And I know they called me from the job, I had to come here and see it was all right, and they closed it up, I can't remember so well. And then we had to move in, and we had no other place, so we had to rent it out, the lower basement to the big lots there. So we covered over the pool. And so our new plant, the heating plant, is on the top of the pool, and part of it's into the big lossy. Oh, there was the best, supposed to be the best clubhouse built in 1913 in the Western New York, including Buffalo and all that. So far as the Eagles, they belong to the paternal order of the Eagles.
So what kind of activities did you...
We had dances, Fridays and Saturdays, and we tried everything. And we had the slot machines, you know, they started there.
They were long?
Yeah, they were.
How long could you keep them going?
Well, in 1951, when I was president of our chief, you know, then the second week, Wednesday before I was going to be installed, the liquor board come up, that's it, going out. They had that was that senator down Mississippi. There was so much gangster, you know, so much racketeering going on, so they told us. And then they came back about a month in December, and then we had to get rid of them for good. And I think I understand later on they were sold for $15 a piece. Out then, they probably went out to Nevada and someplace.
I thought there was more racketeering in the 30s compared to the 50s. Were they still going on after the war?
Well, the 30s was the bootlegging.
And that was when they had the...
That was the rough time.
Rough time, no.
Yeah.
You couldn't serve liquor down there, though.
Hey, pardon?
You couldn't serve any liquor down there at the Viking Hall.
We could serve... What I mean, they always had a liquor, you know, and the meetings they had probably beer or liquor.
Well, you could do that in your private.
But then if they sell open over a bar, you had to have a license.
Oh, see.
And the club license, and of course, there's a lot less than the public license.
And you could get it during the prohibition, too.
You could, not during the prohibition, no.
Everything was closed.
Yeah, it was closed.
Nobody drank anything.
I know that evening when I joined there at McAfee Hall, you know, we had a parole. I think he's in the nursing home now. And he was a big, powerful Dartmouth. And he had a long, good voice, good singing voice, and he always led the drill team in Stalin. And he hollered so down a lot, he said, you know, he's going to have a good meeting next week, get a gallon of hooch and then a keg of beer. And there was right in front of the old city hall, too, you know, the old city hall was where the, so, because one guy ran and shut the windows, it was warm, you know. Shut the windows and he went there and thought that the three police station was right across the street. I can never forget that.
He took a big chance on it. So they couldn't stop the drinking then, they were still...
No, they were... Everybody learned to drink on the prohibition. That was sport. It was a sport. You know, you.
Or to do something illegal.
Yeah, come and knock on the door, and they look you over and let you in, and the girls come in. You know, before there was a separate thing. You know, girls couldn't, ladies could not sit with the men. You know, still not in Canada. In maybe up to recent years, it was a lady could not enter. Could not enter the pubs, as they call it, over there in England. Yes, there was. So it was opened really up, but the young people started drinking more. You know, it was a sporting thing to do.
Yeah.
And the cops were in it, they were probably getting some little on the side, so.
They smelled the liquor too.
Yeah, they were.
So, were there any arrests during that time? Did they arrest any people during that time? Or close anybody down?
Well.
Breaking the law?
They were raids too, you know, and they, like the Polish fellow who worked with me or worked for me there, that little gang I had there, he told me he had a fine $4,000, so he said, I quit, he said that wasn't worth it.
$4,000?
In Buffalo, yeah. And there were some, but they run their places had pretty, you know, there was no broke. I would say no fighting or anything. So, if it happened, was not much of it. It was very, pretty strict. Heck, where the post office is now.
The new one.
Yeah, I know a friend, well, he was a plumber, he run there, and the police chief's son used to go there and have their liquor, you know, and they were cops too. You know, that was.
So there was like a game then?
Yeah, it was just like a guy running for sheriff in Pittsburgh with a friend during the 30s. He come and asked me, went to one of Hotel La Royal, he called. There was kind of dancing in the club. And for $20 on the bar, he said, do you believe in God? He said, I'm running for sheriff in Pittsburgh. He said, how about a drink? So that's the way things went.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they were afraid then to serve people
that
didn't know though.
Well, they had to be careful.
They had to be careful, yeah.
Yeah.
So did they make any money on the Vikings during the 30s, or was it just hanging on?
Well, they didn't make much money, but they were careful. They were the old Swedes, you know, they were saving and they were working hard, you know. We had parties and we worked, all voluntary help. My wife worked for nothing for all the years. I was in there. They worked hard, they tried to put money. Now, you heard it on the goddamn title, excuse me if I can swear, but the title of Swedes, you know, they don't want to spend any money. Still heard today, you know.
Oh.
Now they're spending their money to that. Yeah.
Did many drop out because of problems to pay the dues?
Yes. In 1932, we had 123 members and we lost 60 members for non-payment of dues. And a lot of the old-timers who had been chiefs had to drop out. And they come back then in the 34 and 36, 38. Yeah. So, and we kept on, They were the younger and the more aggressive, and all the other lodges, like Brotherhood and Lefeyrex and...
So the Brotherhood, no, you joined in the same year,
31? No, I joined in the 40s.
In the
40s? Yeah, I joined the Brotherhood. They disappeared, what I mean, they were sitting in the old rooms and there was not really nothing, they didn't have any new ideas, and we had new ideas and we were young and we were...
So the Brotherhood, they couldn't get the young people under?
They couldn't get the young people
either. They
just didn't join? No, I joined just because of the... I belonged to the Club Workers' Chorus and we met in their quarters.
Well, you were also a singer?
Yeah, well, more or less. Yeah, I can...
So you started the... Did you organize the singing group here and with the Vikings?
Well, if you take this off for a minute.
It's not on.
So did you organize the singers then with the Vikings?
Well, turn that off. If you turn that off, I tell you. But there were four choruses here. There were the old Swedish, Jamestown male chorus. They were supposed to be the best singers in there. And of course, 1938, there was the last, then they disbanded. And some of, I think three of them came to the workers' chorus. Doc, we call him Doc, his father was a doc, his son was a doctor, Hammerstrom. And Hansen, and Tenner. And there was three, four come to us, and two went to Harmony. Strandwell and Strand, they were very good singers.